101.5. Emily. Dave, welcome to It's Your Health on Thinking Out Loud on night.
Thanks for having me.
Dave, I'm so glad. First of all, I want to say I'm so sorry about Carl. And, you know, on your website you write, quote, if we can help prevent other families from going through what we went through and are still going through during Carl's addiction's death and our grieving process and Carl's short life, we'll have more meaning. I think that's so beautiful and so wonderful what you're doing. And if you can tell us a little bit about Carl, his personality, what, you know, what he was like and how he got involved in drugs,
sure.
If that's okay.
Yeah, I'd be glad to, of course.
Okay.
And one of the things I'm doing is spreading this message to classrooms so far across Ohio and the Midwest that we'll go most anywhere if possible. When I speak to groups, and especially I'll try to get to the 7th and 8th graders and high schoolers, but I first introduce them to Carl, and they have no idea of his fate when the presentation starts. Mm-hmm. And Carl was what we would like to call an all-American boy, raised in a small town, first of 6 children, active in, of course, the normal Little League and things like that, just a well-rounded all-American boy, and self-starter. He was academically, he was tremendous. He was a whiz at math, had ambitions of getting involved in engineering, possibly, and when I make presentations to youth, I talk about peer pressures, and Carl didn't, at age 14, decide to be to die at age 27 of a heroin overdose. He just gradually made poor peer decisions starting around age 14. But great kid, great personality, and it can happen to anybody.
Oh, yeah. Now, were those, did it start with, you know, just like marijuana or drinking? And then it
sure, yeah, his process, and everybody can probably relate to the situation, age 14, so-and-so's parents are gone for the weekend, let's hang out there and watch videos and whatever, and then a little bit of alcohol got involved, and then later more alcohol, and then it progressed from that to pot, and then pills got involved, and every peer pressure decision he made from that point on, you know, just was the wrong decision, and it just, you know, accumulated to his eventual death.
Now, were you aware of this, or did he hide it from you and your family?
Well, you know, as parents of teens, if you're out there listening, teens are going through changes anyway. And in the beginning, he hid it so well, and because his grades were still up, he ran cross country, played basketball, was popular and involved in everything. So he hit it well, and I think it was mostly just weekend binges. And later it progressed, probably the summer of his junior year, we started really realizing, you know, something bad was going on, and we tried to organize a parents group of the kids that all ran around together, and every parent put their head in the sand and said, your kid might have a problem, ours doesn't. And, you know, we're addressing that now with parents, you know, across Ohio and the Midwest, but we missed the chance there.
Yeah. Now, you did, I think, when you and I had the, you know, the pleasure of speaking prior to this, and I think you mentioned that, Carl, he did try to quit.
Oh, absolutely. He got into a little bit of legal trouble, and we found him a rehab place in Mississippi, one of the top ones in the country, and he was clean for a year and a half down there and was involved in helping other people, other peer groups and counseling, and just was doing great. And the state of Ohio, in their infinite wisdom, said, well, you're cured. You have to finish your probation up in Ohio where your triggers and your dealers and your issues are. And it started, he tried hard, and then it started back up. And that is all groups and parents groups or kids groups. Today's heroin addict is not a street person living in a cardboard box in an alley.
Exactly.
They look like you and me, and they're involved in day-to-day activities.
Yep.
And if they survive it, they'll probably end up a street person. But so many of them eventually die, because we're dealing with a whole different heroin from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
And they're hooking a whole new generation.
We've got to get kids in activities and stuff to keep them busy.
Yeah, the two things about small towns, and I think the drug dealers think they might have an advantage in small towns because they, in their mind, the police force in small towns might be like Barney Fife, and they can get away with more.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is, of course, the boredom factor, and I address that when I speak to parents groups and kids groups. Find safe things to do for fun. Talk to mom and dad and say, can we clean out the basement or the garage and set up a place for some goofy, safe fun, be it Wii or John Madden football or Guitar Hero or karaoke or whatever, but get some positive peer pressure that it's okay to have some goofy, safe fun, and the parents all know it's a safe place, and have a different outlet for kids other than wondering whose parents are gone for the weekend.
So they can party.
I'd like to open local chapters in other communities and get parents that are maybe involved, maybe the same situation has happened to them, and they can speak from their heart. And so we're looking for things like that, but mainly just places to speak to get the word out as much as possible. And we are doing different fundraisers to create literature. I'm also looking for success stories. If people out there can relay a success story, how drugs took control of your life and somehow you overcame them, I'm looking to write a series of kind of like the, for the soul.
Chicken soup.
Chicken soup. Yeah, I want to do kind of a success, angel Arms of an Angel success stories.
Oh, that's
great. People that are caught up in it can see that, different, possibilities at the end of the tunnel other than death or just, hopelessness.
Oh, yeah. I interviewed a really nice young man who wrote a book called The Secret Life of a Painkiller Addict, and mm-hmm. It was very, very interesting, and it's very honest, and it's a beautiful book, but he does make it. And actually, speaking of prescription drugs, I want to make sure I mention this. You have something on your site about that, about prescription roundups, which is very important from what he was talking about.
Oh, absolutely. A kick with a lot of the kids right now is go visiting grandma and Aunt Em or whatever, and sneak into her bathroom and take one or two out of each bottle of prescription pills, then gathering on the weekend and having what they call a farm party, PHARM.
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm.
Throw them all in a bowl. They call them Skittles or Trail Mix. And they're drinking alcohol and taking turns popping pills.
Oh, my gosh. It's so
awful.
And you
can talk to anybody that works in an emergency room, and kids come in every weekend from these. And so what we're trying to do is have drug prescription roundups where people have expired prescriptions, or maybe a senior relative has passed and you don't know what to do with them. And we're looking for places. But what we do, we have them on a Saturday morning, and it's like a canned food drive, except people bring their old prescriptions, and they drop them into these safes that we have, and it's under police escort, and then we take them to a crematorium at a funeral home and actually dispose of them that way. The problem is a lot of people flush them down the toilets, and that's a very bad idea because that leaches into our water system if you live out on a farm or if you live in the city. It's hard to get rid of all those chemicals.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think that the work you're doing is so great. And I wanted to bring up, too, you told me the beautiful story of how you chose the name of the foundation, if you can tell us about that.
Yeah. Carl overdosed on February 13th. It was a Friday in 2009. And he was life flighted to the hospital in Columbus. And we have a large family, and we all gathered there, and we knew what was eventually going to happen, that he was going to pass. He was in a coma. And we celebrated his life for 2 days. And over his bed, when we knew it was coming pretty soon, my wife Ellen and I told Carl to give us some sort of sign that he's okay. No reason at all to turn on my car to burn the frost off, because the only appointment I had was the funeral home at noon. But I did. I went over for some reason, turned the car on. It was set on an FM station. And Sarah McLachlan's Arms of an Angel came on just like it was queued up.
Wow.
And that had always been background music to me. It's a beautiful song.
Oh,
I never
so
really
beautiful.
Paid attention to it. And I just tears streaming down my face, listened to the whole song, ran inside, told Ellen we've already gotten our sign, because we had wanted to start a foundation anyway to start speaking to kids. And got online and researched the song. It was written about another musician who had passed of an accidental heroin overdose, and armsofanangel.org was available, so we purchased it. And then I talked to somebody that works at that radio station. He said, that's a miracle, Dave. He said, that song in our playlist is like once or twice a month. It's just not a one on their normal playlist.
Wow.
So the timing
incredible.
Of it, you know, I mean, we see it as a sign.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
That is so beautiful. Well,
and if they get on our website, they can click Carl's story, and it's a slideshow of pictures of Carl with that song in the background. So if you need... If you need to clog up your sinuses with...
I was about to say, I'm already getting teary over here.
I close every speech with that, and it...
not a dry eye in the house, I'm sure.
No, and then I'm all choked up for question and answer period, but...
I think that's good, though, because you need the kids to see that this really affects people in such a deep way.
Oh, the kids that have written me after this presentation... And they said they've always seen drug presentations in school, and they're always boring and whatever. And we're really reaching some kids. And I've had parents call me and say, my child never says anything about what's going on at school. It's just, nothing. And they can't stop talking about this speech. It's about 35 or 40 minutes with a PowerPoint and question and answer. And it's as much on peer pressure and self-direction and feeling good about yourself to fight those peer pressures as it is about the drugs.
Wow, well, I'm just so moved, and I'm really hoping that people are going to go ahead and contact you, and I love the idea of starting chapters in other areas.
We're just in our infancy still, but would love to do that.
Okay, and give us your website again.
It's armsofanangel.org. And we also have a Facebook page. We're trying to build up our friends in that. And it's just Arms of an Angel Foundation. You just search that on Facebook. And that's where a lot of people have written their own stories and praise and things. And in September, we only had 200 and some friends. Now we're up to about 7,500.
That's terrific.
And I'm hearing from people all over the world now. It's just, we're reaching out.
That's fantastic. Well, Dave, I want to thank you so much for coming on today. It's so inspiring. And if people want to reach me, they can go to It's Your